sex matters, period.
What?
Really?
What?
I'm Judy.
I'm Patricia.
And this is the Sex Matters Podcast. We are going to pull topics out of our hats, grab items from the news, and take questions submitted by you, the listener. So we invite you to join us. Why? Because sex matters, period.
To talk about sex, baby.
Exactly. Let's talk about sex, baby.
Let's talk about
all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about sex.
Yeah, if we sing it, we can't get tagged, right? It's just
I don't know. I guess we'll find out. Hey, if Salt and Peppa's people come after me, we can cut that part out or apologize, or I'll say it in Latin or something.
Apologize, yeah.
Anyway. We'll find out when we get in trouble what we have to do.
Funny.
I'm always fascinated with those types of rules with some of those music and things like that, because so much of that, it's like, oh man, when I hear things like that, that makes me want to like run out and listen to the song or play my album, or, you know, you get pumped up about it again. And I suppose that doesn't always make somebody money, but sometimes it means I buy it like on iTunes or whatever. So anyway. I understand both sides, but I also know how many albums I have purchased because somebody gave me a mixed tape.
Yeah. Yep.
And I know some singers are totally okay with it. Like, they're like, oh my gosh, share my music, because this is how I learned about music when I was a kid. And then the lawyer's not so much a fan, but oh well. All right. So this episode, inspired by our discussion in one of the other episodes about sizes of vaginas and sizes of penises, and how there are different sizes and three different sizes for women, kind of sort of, that come from the Kama Sutra, right?
Yep.
And I got thinking about that after we did the episode of, well, that's interesting. They talk about matching up. But I'm thinking, but in arranged marriages in India, you don't get a trial run of checking out the equipment to see if it fits. That's not how you're matched up.
You're such a thinker, Judy.
A few days sometimes, but I get there. Well, because I'm thinking about this going, you know, so I lived in India for 6 months.
I did not know that.
Yeah, back a billion years ago in 2007.
Wow.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was amazing. I think I still have some of the newspapers with like the arranged, like the ads for arranged marriages.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And they're very interesting. And so I just always think this is a really interesting topic, because when we bring it to how does it fit with America or how the way we view things here, when we look at history, and I don't remember if you brought this up recently or somebody else did, of the whole, there used to be where you had marriages, but the women would have guys on the side, because you had your partner, but then you had other people that you had sexual relationships with. So
yeah,
it's an interesting thing that we've traveled through history, and then we've decided, okay, monogamy is the way to go, and monogamy doesn't really work for many people very well. And then we also live in a culture where you can't talk about sex, so you're not getting into this monogamous relationship with education, conversation, experience under your belt. You're all just shooting at it, hope it all works, and then how many people are really happy? How many people do we have cheating? How many people do we have just miserable, crabby, and cranky? And you know, and so so the whole arranged marriage thing is interesting in another culture, but there's relationship here to what we do and what most people are not doing anymore. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I took some notes when I knew we were going to be talking about this. And one of the things that I really, really am fascinated by are when countries can get something down pat. Like I am fascinated by the country of Rwanda, because 90% of their women have the ability to squirt.
Right? Oh gosh, like, wow.
I'm doing all kinds of research around Rwanda and squirting and stuff like that. But here, when we talk about arranged marriages, 90% of marriages in India are arranged. 90%. And 74% of marriage-aged people between the ages of 18 and 35 prefer their marriage to be arranged versus trying to figure it out themselves.
So isn't that interesting? Because it's typically arranged by your parents.
Parents and your and extended family. There's a matchmaker, somebody in your family line that is the matchmaker that has all the secrets, the intuition, the something that they tap into, and they give advice to the parents as to who a good match would be, or they're constantly watching behaviors and stuff. It's kind of like the aunt on the side who's always watching, kind of picking up your nuances and things like that to figure out who a good match for you would be.
Right.
So there's like a family matchmaker. Now, matchmaking in the United States is starting to come back, and this is pretty cool. We can probably talk about this another time. But this idea of an arranged marriage over there, now, well, at the, please, listeners, understand that we're not saying this is the way to go. This isn't the thing. This isn't the answer, because there's a flip side to all of this. Of course, there always is. Mm-hmm. But they do have a very low divorce rate. It is 1%, one of the lowest in the entire world.
And so my question with that is that 1% a divorce rate? Like how real, like I'm not saying it's an unreal rate, but what drives that? Is it the fact that there is so much respect for the choice that the parents or matchmaker has given that you put everything into this relationship to make it work? Is it that people don't feel like they can get divorced? Like that's just such a bad thing that they don't say anything, you know, if they need to. Are people doing things on the side to make their themselves okay and comfortable? And, you know, like I know I've certainly from some of the movies on India and sexuality, and there was a story about some men who were married and, but they were undercover gay basically. And so they would go meet their boyfriends, you know, completely 100% in secret, because not that wasn't, you know, okay, right? So it's, I think I have a lot of questions that go along with that. And, but I do think there is a reverence for that, for the arranged marriage. I've known people in the US who are totally, yes, they believe that is exactly the way it should be, that their parents know them well, their parents have life experience, and they know the best choice for them. One of the people I hung out in India with when I lived there, she very much was like, this is the way to go. Why wouldn't an arranged marriage work? You're looking, you're matching people of similar, you know, families with similar money, with similar education. So she absolutely thought that love marriages, you know, based more on feelings and irrational things, perhaps.
Well, let's dive into some of the reasons why they say arranged marriages work.
Yeah.
And then we can kind of talk about some of the reasons why they might look like they work. Sort of some of the things that you were bringing up, because we want to be balanced here. I don't want to be all woo-woo, but I have a perspective myself, being that, you know, my second marriage, I met my husband, and after 2.5 hours of meeting him, I knew he was the one, and I was engaged in 9 months and married in engaged in 9 days and married 3 months later.
Wow.
And it's the most fulfilling, loving relationship I've ever been in. And a lot of it has been learning about each other along the way. So just certain levels of acceptance and stuff. So,
And you came also at it at a very different point in your life where you've got a lot of, like, once we're older, there is the, I don't have time for that. I got to get into this. Yay or nay. Like, what's going on here?
You're right. But with that wisdom, how much, that's where the parents come in. Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
They have certain wisdom. They have certain experiences that they have certain cut the bullshit kind of attitudes where, like, part of it is the relinquishing of choice. I mean, think about how much pressure is taken off of you, how much of the judgmentalness that goes into our egos picking apart another person, trying to level them and make them appear whether they're good enough for us or not. Mm-hmm. Our short-sightedness. Oftentimes we get caught up in lust or what we see right in front of us versus what a long-term future might look like with this person, right? Mm-hmm. So there's the relinquishing of choice. We're giving that pressure over to the family to, and the trust that's there to, you know, hopefully it's a loving family and they're looking to put you with the best match. And, if it wasn't a loving family and it was just about cows and money or.
Right. Whatever, which in some cases, those things come into play, right?
Yeah, yep. Of course. You know, that may not have been as fulfilling, but let's just keep in mind that in India, they're very different than us here in the United States in that men and women still have very specific roles in India. There's still definitely patriarchy system there. The woman has there are expectations of her coming into the wife role, and same with the man. So it's really interesting. So we have relinquished choice. The second thing though is choice set size, which is a mathematical equation. This is really kind of interesting because in India, they believe that there's only a certain number of people you are going to meet before you marry.
Mm.
Okay. So it's kind of along the same idea that us women have the biological clock. Like we only have so many eggs in our basket, you mm-hmm. know? It's the same idea for them in India, but it's how many people you're going to meet before you get married or it's gone.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Right?
Right.
Okay. So it removes all the other options. Once you find the one and you make the choice, ta-da, you've arrived. You've achieved the goal in life to be married and have a family.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't make you, it's a celebration in a milestone kind of way that shows you that you're on the right path in your life versus all the other options that might be out there, like, oh, being too picky about this or about that. In their culture, there's an urgency.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this mathematical equation, it's something like the square root of N is where N is the potential lifetime dates that you have.
Okay.
Okay. So that exact mathematical equation is what is used with OkCupid and a lot of other dating services here in the United States.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
So behind the scenes, behind everything, we're having arranged marriages kind of happening in the, you know, so I found that incredibly interesting.
That is fascinating. Yeah.
And, I put a little note here. I'm starting to really think that men might only have so many loads to shoot too. I don't, because I'm writing that down about the women having only so many eggs in their basket. And I'm thinking about ED nowadays and I'm like, maybe they just are running out of juice. Who knows? Anyway, that's another topic. And then the other thing is that it's a choice without deliberation. This is another benefit of arranged marriage,
mm-hmm.
where it's trusting a gut instinct. Once two people are paired by whoever's matchmaking, they meet in a social setting with family and everybody around. And then if both of them agree, they can go on chaperoned courting dates, but there's a limited number. And then they have to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
There's no prolonged period of time.
Wow.
It's a gut instinct. You have days to decide once you're courted. And it kind of eliminates the buyer's remorse. It's kind of like, the more you're deliberating, the more attachment, the more judgment there is. You make a choice. It's not based on what's missing. It's based on what's there.
That's an interesting perspective. You have to look at what's in front of you.
Right.
Well, and just to give you an example. So, so when we went to India, we went there. I went there on July like 5th. Joel was there a month earlier. We ended up staying longer than we had originally planned because one of his coworkers was getting married and she wanted Joel to be at the wedding because I think that it felt, if I remember the whole stories correctly, that it felt very auspicious and important for him to be there because the day that Joel flew in to India was the day she met her husband for the first time.
Wow.
So he went in June, beginning of June. Their wedding happened. I should know the date. It was like, you know, November 28th type of date. Such a fascinating process of the whole chaperoned, you know, I get to know somebody best one-on-one, right? So like, I think of all of these things and I hear these things and I'm like, oh my gosh, that would, like, how would I handle that? But again, you hope that your, that culture is taking over and helping you. Cause I also remember the first time I ran into somebody who was looking, her parents were looking for her and she was excited about it. Cause I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this must be the worst thing ever. And she's like, no, it's, this is fine. Right. Yeah. And I'm thinking,
it's if how my, they did it.
Right. And if my parents chose for me, I don't know how that would have gone, but it would, you know, my mom and I disagreed about a lot of things when it came to men. So it would have been a very different perspective. Although she did think I should marry Randy Travis, which would have been an interesting thing. She's like, you need to go out with guys like that, which would have been very fitting for me. I love music. It would have, I could have gone with that. But it's, I mean, all of those pieces together and you hear stories where it's not the best thing, but man, you also hear stories where it works out great. And it's, again, it's that, like you're saying, it's a different perspective. So you're looking at how to keep the commitment, maybe a little more so.
Yeah. Think about it too, here in the United States, how oftentimes a long dating process provides a lot of time for us to self-sabotage. Right? Because especially as women, we're always looking for the shoe to drop. We're always looking for the veil to come down. We're looking for who they really are. We're looking for when their past is going to come back to flare up and meet me face to face, like their past lovers or whatever else, you know, comparison and all that kind of stuff. It's really, really easy for us to self-sabotage through our dating and accepting behaviors in dating because it's just dating. Where in a marriage situation, and I'm going to talk about this from my personal experience, I've been going through some kind of challenging things. We're at our 3-year anniversary of the day we met. It happens this week. Aww. And to think that that 3 years went by so fast, but we've really grown together over these 3 years in places where I probably would have gone the other way. Mm-hmm. I probably would have said, adios, bye, not my cup of tea right now, you know? But the benefits outweigh the negativity so much. And it's actually been a huge growing experience for me because I have to deal with things. I have to learn how to communicate better. I have to learn how to trust my instincts. I have to learn how to love somebody through something. You know, there's just certain things that you just don't have the opportunity to just say, see ya, I don't care. You know, it's especially in a culture like in the Indian culture, the Hindu culture, where family and marriage and the culture is so important. There's extra weight put there to make it right, to make it work.
Right, right.
When they go into these relationships, they have low expectations of each other, which is another huge blessing because there's so much more weight put on compatibility and financial security than romance. And when lowered expectations are there, it's more likely that your partner would then meet or exceed your expectations, leaving you satisfied, highly satisfied, ecstatic even, thinking positively of your partner versus somebody who's always striving to meet your expectations. Have I gotten there yet? Have I done everything? Is this what she wants? Is this what he wants? You know? Mm-hmm. And here we go. We're going to start talking about the flip side. So we have to keep things in perspective. We're talking culture to culture, household to household, individual to individual. It's the same thing as here in the United States. I mean, because in India, they still struggle with religious hypocrisy. We do that here, right?
Yep.
They deal with fear in relationships. I mean, that might be part of the statistics of very low divorce because perhaps the women are fearful of leaving. Mm-hmm. Or how would that even happen? How would a woman in that country even initiate a divorce?
Right.
Right. How much adultery is happening? How much, you know, how much rape is happening? I mean, honestly, when I'm looking through, I was mentioning that I had found that there's 8 types of marriage in the Hindu culture, and not all of them have religious sanctity to them, but rape is mentioned in the bottom 3.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, part of me thinks that that's acceptable as a marriage arrangement, which is very not okay as far as I'm concerned.
Right. Are they basically saying that that's where, if you are raped, that is the person you are married to? Is that?
They're saying that after they're married.
Oh, that he, okay.
He can forcibly abduct
okay.
her.
Okay.
And, you know, do different things with her. So,
right. Okay.
You know, because it's more of a purchase.
I ownership. Mean,
these are old teachings from just ancient Hinduism. Mm-hmm. And I can't even pronounce a whole bunch of them, but some of them are about elopement. Some of them are about romantic love. Some of them are about arranged love, but most of them are about a dowry of some sort.
Right. Okay.
Purchase or ownership type situation. So I don't know. I find all that super duper interesting. And then again, like I said, from my own perspective, I don't know. I like the idea of a relationship as a business arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big thing for me. I'm actually putting together web courses about that and how to approach a relationship as a business arrangement. And, you know, once you figure out all those dynamics, all those different parts that you would as if you were acquiring a business or merging two businesses, there's a whole lot of communication that happens and there's a whole lot of expectation. There's roles, there's responsibilities and all that kind of stuff. And it can all be kind of hashed out that way.
Well, and I can think somebody would be listening to this going, well, that does not sound fun and romantic. And
it gets so totally hot.
Well, but here's the thing. Years ago, marriages were created because of land ownership, right? So, I mean, that was a lot of it. So we have just kind of
come full circle.
Right. And have we got to this whole idea of romantic love? You know, I mean, if you read the Bible, it's not so much romantic love, right? Yeah. So, but I mean, that's how marriage has kind of come. And now we're watching Disney princesses and we're looking for that and that's not happening. And it's not necessary, you know, there is something to be said for everybody having that discussion, whether you follow the exact agreement or you use it as a guideline or whatever, but it helps you talk about each other's expectations.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, here's where we go back to sexual authenticity, right? Knowing yourself going into a relationship, even in Indian culture, in the Hindu culture, if they were to be sexually authentic and that was something they were able to talk about during their chaperoned courting, mm-hmm. maybe that would be something that would help them have a gut instinct that, yeah, I really like them or no, I don't, or yeah, I, you know, His horse matches my my deer or whatever. I don't know. You know, just like, so I just want to go back to the whole Kama Sutra was written a really, really long time ago to help people. It was for them to pursue their duty, their possessions, and their physical desires. So that's why the Kama Sutra was written. And so it's really, really old, ancient, and it's meant to be a tool. It's meant to be similar to, say, a Bible or a Quran or something like that, except it has a lot more sex in it than what's the thing.
A lot more guidelines around sex or ideas around sex. Yeah.
And what we go to right away when we think of the Kama Sutra is sex and stuff. But that's not all that it's about. It's about their entire culture and teaching fundamental aspects of marriage, of business, of, you know, like the Proverbs or whatever else. It's got a whole lot of teaching in there. But the sexual part is, and the physical desire part is just the fun part to talk about.
Right, right. Yeah. I have known people who have bought the Kama Sutra and were like, wait a minute, where's all the pictures? Why are there words in here? What's going on? Not realizing that is this complete, it's a complete picture of many things in ancient writing. And I think, you know, like your statement of when they're on their chaperone dates, do they get, what do they get to talk about? Some of those kinds of things. And I'm curious to know that. And I know, again, some of the books that I have read, which not necessarily all, you know, nonfiction, some of the fiction books and how much is, are those based on reality, but seeing some of the stories where the female characters are bringing in, or the writer is having the female character bring in a little bit more of saying, we need to talk about this and we can both enjoy this. And I don't want to feel used. I want to feel loved. And the male character being a little more open to having those discussions. So it's how do you help the women be able to feel empowered to do that? And, you know, in earlier you and I were talking, and the mention of love marriages are becoming a little more of a popular thing over there. And that's, you know, that's challenging. I know I've certainly heard stories of women who, you know, have found this guy they want to marry, but their family has got them on this track to marrying this person. What do they do now? You know, because if they go with the guy that they love and they don't go with this person that their parents have arranged for them, it's sometimes meaning for them to completely, they have to leave, completely leave.
Yeah. Like shunned, like the Amish. Culture really does play into a whole lot of the shame, guilt, fear. If I were to flip flop to say back to Rwanda, where I was talking about, you know, that culture is becoming more and more Americanized and more Westernized. They are starting to sort of steer away from this whole idea of the ability of women want to be more, they want to be more in their masculine power. They want to be standing up for themselves. They don't want to be in situations where they're defined by the men and whether they're able to make them squirt or not. Although it's a huge part of their culture, it's changing. The face of Rwanda is changing ever so slowly, but I think it happens everywhere. Change is everywhere. Change is inevitable, and it's how we embrace change, you know, and how judgmental we are about it, or how different people do different things.
Right.
Because it's what they know. And without awareness, you can't change it.
Right. So
that's why we're here, because sex matters, period. Right.
Exactly. Oh, all right. Well, should we wrap this one up?
Yeah, I think that's good.
Okay. Do you want to talk about, Patricia, anything special you've got going on that you want to share?
I would say that I will be publishing my new book in October, which I haven't actually titled yet. I'm still working on it, but it's basically a do-it-yourself sexual makeover.
Wow. So,
really, really great stuff. Like a transformational beginning to end kind of thing of how to really unlock your sexuality. So keep an eye out for that. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about it when it's official. That's coming. We have the podcast here. We've got, I've got the Facebook, the Power Exchange, and some fun stuff going on there. And I have some speaking engagements I'm doing down in the cities. If you're interested, just send me a note and I will try and keep a calendar going soon.
Are your events, the things that you're doing publicly, are those things on your website?
I have put them, I advertise them on my Facebook page.
Okay, so to keep up with your events, look at the Facebook page.
Yeah, because that's where most of my, I'm doing most of my events and stuff down in Minneapolis. So most of my local followers are following me on Facebook. Otherwise, it would be kind of hard for people that are hitting my website from all over the place to even think about coming in for a 2-hour speech somewhere. Yeah. So thank you for letting me do that. And my book that's always available on Amazon and Kindle, and also through future Patreon subscriptions.
We have a link right on the Sex Matters website, right on the right side. There's a link. There's a picture of your book that goes right to Amazon to make it really easy.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
All right. Well, let's tie this one up and we'll, have a great week, everybody.
Awesome. Bye.
Stop by our website at sexmatterspodcast.com where you can ask a question, leave a comment, make a suggestion. And hey, if you have a comment or experience on any of the stuff we talked about today, we'd love to hear from you on the website, on the Facebook page. On the website, you can also get on the email list. Don't forget, if you do, you're going to get the PDF of the Daily Positive Sex Affirmations from Patricia. You can leave a review, and of course, you can support us on our Patreon page. Check out the levels. We may be flirting with those a little bit in what we add, but one of them I know will include getting Patricia's book as part of your gift as you become part of our Sex Matters community. So hop on board. You can find Patricia at thepowerexchange.co, that's .co, and find out how to work with her individually, take her courses, etc. You can connect with her on Facebook as well under The Power Exchange. Her book is called Crossing the River Called Suffering. And again, you can find that through the Patreon levels as well as through our website in Amazon. Connect with me and my weekly health and wellness podcast to support your well-being at wellnessrenpodcast.com and on iTunes and many other places as well. Well, I don't have a very good joke to leave you with because all of the jokes about marriages were just not very good. So I passed that up. I was, however, in search of a quote, or maybe more accurately, a synopsis. I heard Dan Savage talk about bachelor parties and how it's sort of a shame that this whole bachelor party is a celebration of your last night of freedom and all of that, instead of looking at the celebration of going forward and being on this journey with someone, this life journey, this sexual journey, and continuing to make it a journey instead of this idea that all the fun sex that you're going to have is over and, you know, that's kind of this ball and chain kind of thing, instead of celebrating this life journey and looking at the sexual aspects of it as creating great adventures together. So I love that perspective. I think it's great. And if I've got your perspective all wrong, Dan Savage, you know where to find me and you are welcome to come on the podcast and correct me. That would be just fine. All right. Have a great day. Have a great week. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.